Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender. Great to have you here on this very rainy Friday, but it is fall. It's been such a beautiful, spectacular fall that one day of rain just helps us to get some things done around here.
This is quite remarkable because so many years we have fall only as an idea.
Yes.
But in 2015, fall has been a reality in the upper Midwest.
It has been beautiful. It's been just a great time to walk outside, and now you can sit and read a book, which is a good idea too.
And learn things.
And
like
learn
on this
things.
Program.
Yes, we're going to learn a lot of things today. In fact, I have a question for you, something that I've been thinking about because I just had the great opportunity to have spent 4 or 5 days with my own mom and had some great conversations just about growing up and her parents and my parents and my own parenting, which of course is the hardest to talk about because it's still ongoing. But let me ask you a question. What is the best thing or things that your parents have ever done to help you either grow in your faith or grow as a person? Can you think of something like that off the top of your head? If you can think of one way they helped you grow in your faith.
I think I would just say the first thing that comes to mind is just engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were always curious about what I was up to, what I was doing, how I felt about what was going on in my life.
Sure.
Always asking questions, even though sometimes I didn't exactly offer in the teen years informational responses.
Nothing.
Yeah,
yes.
Mom, stop asking me questions,
yeah.
Mom. But no, they kept at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that made a huge difference.
Well, you have no shortage of words now. So I'm guessing that they developed the kind of person who likes to be conversational.
I think so. And I so appreciate that because I know, just looking at it from their perspective, that can't have been easy. Mm-hmm. That's got to be discouraging for a parent when your kid just says, please go away. I don't want to talk about this right now. But they kept at it. They didn't stop.
I've thought that many times where I'll have a conversation that is less than enjoyable on my end, where I say, I'm giving up. I'm done. And then I will pray about that exact conversation, and I just hear God saying, keep going, keep asking, keep at it. And sometimes that's very difficult.
That makes sense to me.
Yes. So if you're listening today, maybe you have something that your parents have done or said or a way that they worked in your life that helped you to grow in your faith and you'd like to share it. We would love to hear you hear that story from you. So you can give us a call anytime during the program today at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And you are in for a treat today because if you don't have any ways that you think your parents helped you grow in your faith and so you don't know what it is that you want to do to help your kids, we're going to give you some ideas on how to help your own children not only grow in their faith, but also become learners and become leaders in their own lives. Because our guests today are Bill and Pam Farrell, and they've written a fabulous book called The 10 Best Decisions Every Parent Can Make. And not only are we going to talk about growing in your faith, but just becoming a person who can make decisions, who can make wise decisions, and who can think critically. So if you're in for that, well, if you're up for that, then you're in for just a great treat today. Let me tell you a little bit about our guests, and then we will get in on the conversation. Bill and Pam Farrell are the co-founders and co-directors of Masterful Living, an organization that provides practical insights for personal relationships. The Farrells are also regular relationship columnists. They've written several books, including Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti. If you haven't read that, I highly recommend it. And they have 3 sons and a daughter-in-law. Welcome, Bill and Pam.
Hi, it's so good to talk with you. I wish we had the beautiful foliage around us. We're in amazing Arizona with our grandkids, though, so we're enjoying it.
Well, I'm glad. And you don't get that beautiful fall that we do, but we are jealous of you for 80% of our winter. So
yeah,
there's that.
When we want to see a white winter, we go to the beach. Sorry to volunteer that.
That's okay. We know. We know the reality. In fact, I just got back from a week in New York, and I asked my children what their favorite activity was, and we had many, as you can imagine. Their favorite day was the day we spent in Central Park, biking around, just lingering and hanging out by the water. And I said, you know, it's really amazing that that's your favorite day, but I understand it because that is what it's like to live in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere you go in the Midwest. And so if a New Yorker were to ask you, what is it like to grow up in Minnesota? You can say Central Park.
There we go.
So it's great. It's nice that we have all those different options on places to visit and things to see. And that's one of the things that my husband and I have tried to be intentional about in just showing our children how other people live, where other people live, and giving them an education that everything is not exactly like the house where we live in the community that we live. And that kind of goes along the lines of at least one of the 10 best decisions, correct?
Right. Yay. And being intentional in exposing your kids to a vast variety of God's creation, including God's people all over the world, and helping God's people all over the world, and seeing God's creation all over the world, that is fantastic. And you took it a step further, and you created a memory. And that's one of the things that we talk about oftentimes when we talk about the 10 best decisions a parent can make is we want to leave a trademark on our kids with traditions and memories. So the TM for trademark stands for traditions and memories. Traditions are the things that you do year after year, and memories are those once-in-a-lifetime kind of opportunities that you create for your kids to help them grow and learn and maybe a rite of passage.
Mm. Those are very fun for us, too. In fact, people keep saying, this is the time to take them. I have a 10 and a 13-year-old because they will actually remember some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, another thing that when you expose your kids to other ways of living and other places, it frees them up from the disappointment that often happens in life because we all tend to evaluate ourselves against ourselves and end up being too hard on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see how other people live and you see the things that they struggle with and you see the things they get to enjoy, it puts your life in better perspective. And you begin to realize everybody's life is imperfect and everybody's life has great aspects to it.
So it
helps your kids appreciate what they have.
It's so wise, and it also helps us as parents, too, because I know, especially reading the beginning of your book of when you first became a parent, I also felt very overwhelmed on all of the things that I felt that I needed to do in order to create this perfect child and to be the perfect parent. Can you talk a little bit about how both of you felt when you found out you were a parent and you had all of these things that you wanted to accomplish with your children?
So Bill was a youth pastor, and I was holding Brock, and I was rocking him and praying, Lord, it seems like some kids seem to soar and succeed, and other kids seem to stumble and fall. Like, what's the difference, God, in helping kids really achieve their God-given potential and not? And I began to make a list. I looked at the healthy families in our church and the healthy kids in the youth group where we were pastoring, you know. And I began to make a list of all the things that I thought kids needed in their life by the time they're 18, traits and skills and leadership qualities. And the list was about 100 things long. Now the list is in 10 best decisions a parent can make. But that day was totally overwhelmed by the list. And Bill came in from work, and I'm like, look at all this stuff we're supposed to get in a kid's life. By the time they're 18, I don't see how this is even possible. And my wife's husband took a deep breath, and he said,
well, and I appreciate Pam's, you know, calling me a wise husband. My first reaction is I'm completely overwhelmed. Not only does Pam have this ridiculously long list, but she's also emotionally very intense. It isn't like which of these can we choose to put in our kids' lives. It's we have to get all of these things in our kids' lives. So I looked at it, and I'm thinking, well, she's right. We really do, but this is overwhelming. And as I looked over the list, I realized it really fell into three categories for us. But the first category is we wanted our kids to be learners, that we know we live in this highly technological, highly informational age. So we knew if our kids weren't learning on a regular basis, they were going to fall behind. So they need to have this attitude that I'm going to learn something new every week of my life, and that's going to become normal for me. Second, we wanted them to be leaders, and we didn't expect them all to be upfront leaders. We just wanted them to be intentional in the way that they lived and to be able to invite their friends to join them in a healthy lifestyle. We didn't want them just following the crowd wherever the crowd happened to go. We wanted them to be more intentional. And then finally, we wanted them to love God for themselves. We didn't want them to love God just because their parents love God. We wanted them to have their own personal faith. And we knew we couldn't make that one happen, but we were pretty sure we could set up an environment where it was likely to happen. So learners and leaders who love God became our three guiding goals for raising our kids.
And there were different times, of course, when those commitments changed, whether the children were very little, whether they were growing into adolescence, and you have adult children as well, correct?
Right. But that is a theme that kind of carried us through all the years. We decided that we were going to create a family mission statement, a family motto, which is those who honor God, God honors. It's kind of like the GPS for our family. And we always trained our kids, before you say or do anything, check in with your GPS. Does this show honor to G, God, P, people, S, self? It's easier to make a great decision if you check in with your GPS. Those who honor God, God honors. And then we created a family moniker or crest. And on it, it had those three L's, learner, leader, who loves God. It has two hearts. That means Pharaohs keep their promises in the area of relationships especially. And then it has a cross with a star. And that means that we believe that every person has a God-given passion or calling or strength. And when you connect to God, he helps you shine out his glory and shine like a star. And so that was kind of the compass for our family. But, you know, it might feel a little bit like you're born into Pharaoh boot camp. If all you ever think is like all those things, son, you need to be this, daughter, you need to be that. And so we didn't want it to feel like that. And so we thought, well, what's fun to kids? You know, it's Christmas, birthday, and parties. So we decided we would have a learner leader day once a year. Ours was right before school started. Other families do it on every child's birthday or in January or at the beginning of summer. It can be any time during the year, but we decided to connect it with that back to school. Mm-hmm. And on that day, we would negotiate privileges and responsibilities. And in the parenting book, there's a list of what kids can do at different ages and stages. And so I encourage the audience, okay, you're not the maid, you're the parent. And so our kids can do a lot more than we think that they can. And then we would give them a gift. And that's what makes it like a party, a learner leader gift. And on that day, the gift was three things. It was personal. I thought of you, child. Not everybody gets the same. It was practical, something we would buy anyway, backpack, lunchbox, so it wouldn't break the family bank. And it was prophetic, or it spoke to the promise of potential of that child. This is what we see God doing in your life kind of moment. And so we would give that gift. We would sign the learner leader contract after negotiating privileges and responsibilities every year with the kids. We would choose a verse that we choose one trait off of the list of leadership qualities. And then we would choose a verse that went along with that trait. And we would pray that verse over that child all year, post it on their door, you know, write it on their lunchbox. It was just everywhere in their life all year that year. And once our kids started learning to read, we actually took them to Bible Gateway or Faith Life website and taught them how to find their own verse of the year. So they really took ownership of it. And so we did that year after year from the time they were four all the way through 18. And so that was kind of the common thread in our family.
And let me jump in and share, Joe, what I think made it workable, because all of us know it's a lot of work raising kids. But one of the things I lobbied for is that every year for each of our kids, we would only choose one character trait to emphasize. So, for instance, this year we might be emphasizing integrity, or we might be taking initiative, or we might take kindness. And what happens when you choose one is it simplifies it for everybody. So we don't have to remember the 12 or 15 things we're working on this year. We're just working on one. And it simplifies it for parents. It simplifies it for the kids. And for those parents out there who are afraid that, well, if I only work on one trait, my kids aren't going to develop all the ones that they need. What I would tell all of us as parents is that when a child develops one character trait, it's like a magnet that attracts others. And so
the
you will develop more other traits in your kids' lives simply because you're focused on one.
Hmm. So it is kind of broken up into manageable sections for us parents who feel overwhelmed already. And you know what? So not having to develop all of those things at once is probably a better way to approach it than having to do them all at the same time.
And what kid doesn't want a party on
right.
their behalf?
Right.
Twice a year, you know, their birthday, and they get this Learner Leader Day. And so our kids really look forward to Learner Leader Day, so much so that our kids that are married now and have kids of their own, they have their own Learner Leader Day at the beginning of school with our grandkids. Mm. And so it's a tradition that's passed on from generation to generation. And now we've been teaching on our Learner Leader Days, you know, since our kids were little. And speaking of moms groups and moms, you know, groups and parenting conferences. So I've actually met teens. Now when we go speak on like teenage version of Waffles and Spaghetti, there'll be teens in the audience be like, hey, we do that Learner Leader thing at our house. And hey, thanks for the new outfit that I got this year, you know, that kind of thing. And thanks, I got to go to a leadership camp my parents paid for, and I loved it. And I really think this is what God's, you know, calling me to film and or to art. And so I'm starting to meet teens and young adults and even moms having their own babies now that are starting that next generation, learning that learner leader thing that they were raised with. And it's just fun to see an answer to prayer. And that's really one of the 10 best decisions is to partner with God and pray for your kids as well.
Well, I'm talking to Bill and Pam Farrell today about their book, The 10 Best Decisions Every Parent Can Make. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with your comments and questions. If you'd like, you can call us at 877-93-FAITH. Tell us something that your parents have done or maybe that you're doing that has helped to grow your children in their faith and also in life. We'll talk more about being a learner and a leader and a lover of God coming up on Connecting Faith. Back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender and talking with Bill and Pam Farrell today, relationship experts. They've written a book called The 10 Best Decisions Every Parent Can Make. And parenting is just, it's overwhelming at times. And so to be able to break it down this way, Bill and Pam, is just a really great way, at least for those of us who are analyticals and planners. So to have something mapped out that we can chip away at is an easy way, or at least easier way, to start to parent our children.
Exactly. And right before the break, we were talking about praying for our kids. And Bill and I, before our kids were even born, we decided that we would pray for them and pray out loud over them, even while they're, you know, in the womb. We believe that life starts right at conception. And so that's a new life. And we believe that they are fearfully and wonderfully made. And Jeremiah says, before you were even born, God says of Jeremiah, I appointed you a prophet to the nations. So God has a plan for each one of our kids, and we just need to partner with God. And Proverbs says, train up a child in the way he should go, and that means according to their God-given bent. And so it's our job to partner with God and see what that God-given bent is and then raise our child that way. And when that day that I was writing the learner leader stuff, I also wrote out a prayer by the time you're 18. And I'm like, Lord, I want our kids to be like a Daniel or a Joseph, to stand alone for their faith. I began to pray that over our kids.
Well, and as I was reading that prayer, I thought, oh my goodness, everyone would want something like this for their child. And sometimes do we prescribe things on our children that maybe aren't their bent? Because you listed some great ways of trying to figure out what are they gifted in? What is the treasure that God has put inside of them? And how much time and when should we start putting time into figuring that out along with them?
Exactly.
Well, let me jump in, Joe, and just say, the parents should start looking for that individual giftedness as early as possible. Because I look back at my kids, and things started to emerge in their life when they were like 2 and 3. And I looked at it and went, I need to pay attention to that right there. I may not even be able to put into words what that is, but I need to pay attention to that.
It can be as simple as, like, our middle son was super high energy and was amazing athlete, even at like a year old, 18 months old. I mean, so we saw this strength in his life. As he grew, it turned into hyperactivity. That's the high energy. So we can choose to look at the negative or we can choose to look at the positive. That would be an example of looking early in a child's life. Our oldest child, early on, he could take things apart, put them back together, like love Legos, math games. He's a math teacher and a coach nowadays. And our youngest was just like so sweet. He was the most easygoing, sweet baby, but he was super curious. He didn't want to rush through life. He wanted to like take apart the coffee pot and figure out how to put it back together again. He's now an engineer working for GE. So they do show up. If you look at the seeds early on, you can see some of the strengths of your kids even early on in their life.
And the other thing, Joe, that as parents need to look for is often our kids are overwhelmed by their giftedness early, and so it's the irritating point of their life. Like our middle son, Zachary, is really gifted with people, and he was overwhelmed by it when he was young, so he would be mean to people to create distance so that he didn't have to carry the responsibility for those folks.
See, so super sensitive about their needs.
Say it again?
He was super sensitive about their needs. That's what Bill means about being overwhelmed. Like if he met somebody and they were hurting, he felt responsibility to try to fix it, and he felt that way about everybody in his world. He was very perceptive about what was going on around him.
But it would be easy to conclude that he was a mean child when he was young.
Right.
But in reality, he was exactly the opposite.
Well, and spiritual gifts, it would seem, would be something that would be necessary or at least advantageous to start looking at within your children as well to help them recognize.
Yeah, and the best way to help your child develop their spiritual giftedness is to develop your own spiritual giftedness in front of them. So let them see you using your spiritual gifts. Do ministry together as a family and give them a part. Even when our boys were little, preschoolers, we had them be, Bill was a pastor, so our boys were greeters. And like, can you give stickers to every kid that walks in the door? And they had a job early on, whether it was, you know, taking snacks to the kids in the nursery, or whether it was greeting people, or whether it was helping set up, take down chairs. We just made them a part of ministry and then saw what they were good at and then helped them go that direction. So really early on, they were using their gifts. And our youngest son, like, he threw up when he had to hold up his kindergarten like collection and say 2 sentences about it. We knew early on he does not have the gift of speaking in front of people. That is not going to be where he goes.
Well, Bill and Pam, I'm so sorry to take this break so soon, but we have a hard break coming up at the bottom of the hour here. If you're listening in today, we're talking with Bill and Pam Farrell, 10 best decisions every parent can make. And we'll be right back to talk more about that coming up on Connecting Faith. Well, Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Very privileged today to be able to talk to authors Bill and Pam Farrell about their book, The 10 Best Decisions Every Parent Can Make. We've been talking about being intentional, about creating opportunities in our kids' lives to be learners, to be leaders, and to love God. And a lot of that means that we need to be very consistent and proactive in setting up our kids for success in these areas. Bill and Pam, we've talked a little bit about when they're younger, when they're real little, what things we can put in place. But as they get older, how are these becoming a learner, becoming a leader, and loving God? How are these things going to help them as they grow as children and into young adults as well?
Well, what happens is you pass on those traits year after year, and you help them take ownership of those traits. And one of the things that's really important for a parent to do as your kids enter that tween and teen year is to change the way that you parent. And when your kids are younger, you know, you are very hands-on. You are the decision maker. And then you kind of shift a little bit to giving them choices as they enter what we call the oasis years. That would be like 8 to 10 or 11. And then between 10, 11, 12, right in there, we saw it was really important when we were youth pastors and then with our own kids. There's one question that will really help parents navigate those tween, teen, and college years, and that is simply,
tell me why I should say yes. Because what happens in a teenager's life is the teenagers go through intense change when puberty hits. And because of the hormonal changes and physical changes, and there seems to be some indication that the body kind of borrows from the brain to do development, and so they don't think as clear as they used to, and they don't think as clear as they're going to.
So you mean that question I've been asking where I say, what were you thinking? That's not the right one.
And the answer was,
that is so
know.
True.
I don't know.
Yeah. Shrug of the shoulders. Yeah, right. I wasn't thinking. Yeah.
So tell me why I should say yes is what I'm going to replace that question
right.
in my
and
brain.
The reason why it's so important is kids go into like this hyper emotional development phase of their life, but they're not thinking as clear as they used to. So what they do is they go from peer group to peer group and they try on the identity of that peer group to see how it feels to them. And the parenting principle that drives the teen years is that our emotions always follow decisions. And so what we as parents need to do is put as many decisions as possible in the hands of our teenagers. But the problem is they have a hard time doing it. So it's inefficient, and it takes our teens a lot longer to get to the right decision than we would get to very quickly. As parents, we just lose patience and we start making too many decisions for them, and it actually stunts their growth.
That's funny go ahead.
Go ahead, you say.
Well, one of the things that I'm dealing with right now with my teenager is I'm trying to let him choose what food to eat. I mean, it's just a very simple thing that he continues to ask me permission. Can I have this? Can I have this? How many can I have? Things like that. And, you know, if he's asking to have 10 candy bars, obviously I'll step in. But they're generally not like that. He just is trying to gauge what he would like to have. And yet he wants to grow strong and be, a good athlete. And he wants to get sleep. And so just trying to put that decision out in front of him, even that has been a little challenging for me to look at the choices he's making.
That's awesome. And we want to do that in every area of a kid's life. Between the ages of like 10 and 18, just decision after decision, roll the ball back into their court. Tell me why I should say yes. And we'll give you a funny example from our son Zach's life when he was a high school.
Before I give this example, let me just say, Joe, that as parents, we need to maintain veto control over these decisions. Because we're not just handing over decisions and saying to the teenager, you can do whatever you want now that you're older. They have to show us that it's a good decision to make. So our son comes to me, and he was part of the cheer squad, a competitive cheer squad down in Southern California. So he comes to me and says, Dad, the whole team's going to go to a movie on Saturday night. Can I go with them? And I've trained myself to say, well, Zach, tell me why I should say yes to this decision. And he went, oh, you probably want to know what movie we're going to see, don't you? I said, yes, I probably would be interested in that. And he mumbled out, not just another teen movie. And he tried to mumble it so I wouldn't really hear it clearly. So I had him repeat it. And as he repeated it, like, all of my parenting instincts are going off. Because this is probably one of the last movies I want my adolescent son to go see. Because I know it's going to promote everything I don't want to have developed in his life.
Hmm. And but so it's again, a skill parents that need to do instead of freaking out like, what? That you need to say, tell me why I should say yes. As calmly as you possibly can, and roll the ball back and make them be a lawyer, make them be an investigator, and create a case for presenting what they want to do to make them think through their choices.
Hmm. So Zach says, you probably want to know what the movie's rated, don't you? I said, I would probably want to know that. He said, well, I think it's PG-13. I said, you think or you know? Hmm. And he went, I think. I said, well, Zach, based on what you've told me, I can't say yes yet. If you want to do some more research on this and come back to me, feel free. So he disappeared to his room. He came back a few minutes later. He said, okay, Dad, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to my team and tell them I want to go to a different movie. And if they decide to still go to this movie, I'm just going to come home.
Hmm.
I said, Zach, I could support that. I'm very proud of you for working through that. I could support that decision. Well, he went to his team. The team decided to go to the movie. So Zach came home, and he was miserable, and he made sure he shared his misery with everybody at the house.
I'm so lame. I'm with my parents on a Friday night. I'm such a loser. All those kind of statements we were just enduring.
And we just let him do that because, again, he's working through his decision. And God doesn't always work this fast, but the next day he went to cheer practice, and they all told him, Zach, that was the biggest waste of money and time we have ever had. We wish we had just stayed home with you.
And Zach, you know what? We're going to listen to you next time. Mm-hmm. And so from that point on, he became the leader of his peer circle because they saw that he made better choices. And that has been the position that he's been with his peers ever since. And so oftentimes, you know, rolling the ball into your kid's court can have great long-term impact. But as parents, it's so hard for us. We just want to freak out every time our kids say something outrageous, you know, like, I'm not sure I believe in God, or, I don't know about what I feel about whether to have sex before marriage or not. And so they're voicing things out loud, and we as parents oftentimes reflect back super emotionally instead of saying, tell me what you're thinking. Tell me why I should say yes. Tell me what brought you to that conclusion. Ask more questions as your kids get older. And the other thing that we did during those teen years is we created more contracts with our kids. We had a teen relationship contract, and it's called a relationship contract because it's not just about dating. It's about relationships. And people can download it at lovewise.com and put it on their kids' computer. And we started this when our kids, before they started getting interested in the opposite sex, 11, 12-ish, you know, and we have them look at what does God say about relationships? What does God say about love? What does God say about desire? What does God say about self-control? Just what is a quality person? How do you spot a quality person? What are appropriate things to do on a date? Just all kinds of questions. How far will you go in the area of you know, physical contact, and what does God say about that? There's all kinds of questions that help dialogue about this. And then each year, we would have a conversation with our kids about their teen contract and as far as relationships go. And when they were 16, we gave them a ID bracelet because they didn't want a purity ring. Girls oftentimes do, boys in sports, that wasn't what they wanted. They had an ID bracelet, and on it said, until the day. On one side, meaning I'm going to wait until the day I get married for sex. And on the other side, they have the verse that goes along with that out of 1 Thessalonians, you know, that it is God's will for you that you abstain from sexual immorality. And then we dialogue about, you know, what are the new struggles? How are we going to handle it? And tell me, how are you going to manage this area of your life, desire, all those kind of things? And we have a tradition at the Farrell household that before you take a girl on a date, you have to call up the dad of that girl and then take your contract over to him and explain how you're going to keep his daughter safe and pure while she's with you. Now, just that alone put off dating at our house for quite a while. And because you have to have some guts, you know, to do that. And after we picked up the dads off the floor, because they can't believe a young man does this anymore, they felt very secure, you know, sending their daughter on a date with our guys. And also a part of that is we set up media contract, like how are you going to use TV and music that you're listening to, the internet. And so we set up some structure there because so many kids go off track with their cell phones and smartphones nowadays. And then a work contract, education contract. And so we just set up things ahead of time, very proactive. So everything's spelled out. And a lot of people are like, how come there's not very many arguments in your house full of teenagers? Well, one of the reasons why is everybody knows who's responsible for what, and they own their decisions.
That sounds so challenging to do, and yet as you're laying it out, we need to trust as parents that it's actually going to be workable.
And I would even go farther than that, Joe, and tell you that my favorite season of parenting was the teen years. Because as our kids were making decisions on their own and they were taking ownership of their life, they started performing at a level that was really fun to watch them at. So academically and intellectually, we started having very stimulating conversations with them. And our kids were all athletes, and they started performing athletically at a level that was just really fun to watch them start to achieve and to develop. And when you turn this kind of responsibility, when you give them this kind of responsibility, they mature quicker than their peers, and they just become very satisfying to watch.
In fact, there's a study that's out that says that the teen, like we always wonder, at what point is the teen mind mature? You know, is it, you know, 12 when they're heading to junior high? Is it 14 when they head to high school? Is it 16 when they maybe let them drive? Is it 18 when we let them vote? Is it 21 when maybe they can kind of buy substances that we may not be all excited about? Is it 25 when hurt to let them rent a car? And for the typical person, it's 25. But studies say that young people who make choices and decisions over and over again, those people that take responsibility for their own life, mature faster. So it's even a part of helping your child's mind develop well is to give them options, choices, and help them own their own life. And a lot of times when we share this learner leader thing and all of our contracts, people are like, this is so intense. This is like homework for parents. Like Pam and Bill, like you're so intense. And I just want to encourage parents that are out there, you can do your work ahead of time proactively, or you can do it at the other end reactively. And it's a whole lot more fun to do the proactive than the reactive, helping kids get back on track. And you know, I just want to share a little example. So the whole learner leaders thing, you know, you always wonder, okay, are you really owning your stuff, or is it just me like forcing you to do all these things? And so Brock, he went from a private Christian school graduating class of 6 to a public high school of over 3,000. And he said, well, what is my uniqueness? What is my passion, my calling? Sports. So he goes, you know, all the gifts that we had been giving him year after year were things like a gym bag with a verse on it, like run in such a way that you might win, or maybe a poster of a Christian athlete, or Sports Spectrum magazine, which is kind of like Sports Illustrated, but no swimsuit edition. So those are the kind of gifts he got. And so he goes from this private school to a public high school. He says, you know what, Mom and Dad, my friends have these big dreams, but they don't have the self-discipline that they need to achieve those dreams. And I would really like to help my friends. I think they just need Jesus. And so he said, what if we had a pizza party for each one of our teams? And each one of my teams, and we invite them to the house, and we'll have pizza. We'll play some games, you know, give away some prizes, maybe watch a video of a Christian athlete of that sport. And I'll share my personal story of faith, give them an opportunity to come to know Jesus in a personal way. As a result of those three pizza parties for his football, basketball, and volleyball team, 34 of his friends came to know Jesus in a personal way his freshman year. And he's like, wow, we need to get my friends need to grow, but your van only holds 7, can't get 34 people in one van for youth group. How about we put something on campus? So he and some friends founded Fellowship for Christian Athletes with the support of the Moms in Prayer group that I was a part of, backing them up in prayer. And so Brock calls, he's varsity quarterback at 16. So he calls his teammates up and he's like, hey, we're going to start this new tradition. We're going to go to the 50-yard line and get down on one knee and pray after every game. And his friends are like, yeah, we're the few men. But then the game came.
And they lost the game 38-0. It was our son's worst football game of his entire career. And at the end of the game, it was like all the young men were just dejected and frustrated and depressed, just wandered off toward the bus.
And so everybody but Brock left the field, but Brock went by himself to the 50-yard line, got down on one knee, and began to pray. Bill was filming the game. And you can hear me on the video camera say, Bill, Brock's all alone. Should I, like, run down there and pray with him?
Like a high school quarterback wants his mommy to come running down the field and help him with anything.
No. But when I said he's all alone, the Holy Spirit inside me whispered, Pam, don't you remember that day that that whole learner-leader thing started? Don't you remember that day that you wrote that prayer by the time you're 18? You had that prayer framed up, that line, let our children be like a Daniel or a Joseph willing to stand alone for their faith. I'm answering that prayer. You leave that boy alone. And just then, three players from the opposing team came and knelt next to Brock. And his FCA leader went down, his student venture leader went down, his youth pastor, and then Bill and I went down to the field with the two other brothers. And we wrapped our arms around Brock, and we said, Brock, we've always raised you boys with our family motto, those who honor God, God honors. And somehow, some way, God's going to honor you for this day. Well, fast forward, that FCA group grew to be about 200 strong under Brock's leadership, and he ended up being named Athlete of the Year at his high school, and then he was named San Diego Citizen of the Year, which comes with a commendation from the governor, and also a scholarship from the NFL Players Association. He was named to the Scholar Leader Athlete National Hall of Fame in football, and in it with a scholarship to Liberty University. And after he'd been at Liberty just this short time, I told that 50-yard line story at a book signing here in Phoenix. And afterwards, the bookstore owner, she said, where did you say Brock got his scholarship? I'm like, well, he's a quarterback at Liberty University. She said, oh, my Hannah, she goes to Liberty. So we exchanged pictures and phone numbers with the kids. And I got a call from Brock. Hey, Mom, you remember Hannah? And I'm like, yeah. He said, I said, you were, you know, contact her. He said, well, we've been dating. And I'm like, how long? 6 weeks. Well, why didn't you tell me? Because I knew you would say you should listen to your mother. And the kids, I know, the kids gave her about 18 months. At the end of that 18 months, they took a week apart to pray and fast to see if they're God's will for each other. At the end of that time, Hannah went back to Liberty. Unbeknownst to Hannah, Brock had a ring design, flown to the football office. He stopped in Phoenix to ask for her hand in marriage. Then he went back to Liberty, got a phone call, the secretary, the eagle has landed. So he picked up the ring, picked up Hannah. He took her to the place they first met, handed her one nail. Then he took her to the bench that they'd always said goodnight at and handed her another nail. Then he took her to the chapel that they always prayed in together about their future and handed her a piece of a board. Then he took her off campus where she shared a home with her friends and handed her the other piece of a board, hammered the boards together into the form of a cross and got down on one knee and said, Hannah, I want our relationship to start and stay at the foot of the cross. Hannah, I love you. Hannah, will you marry me? Hannah, will you kiss me for the first time? To which Hannah replied, yes, yes. And it's just precious to hear your daughter-in-law, the girl you have prayed for since before she was even born, in her wedding vows, Bill got to do the wedding ceremony, and to hear sweet Hannah say, Brock, you are such a man of integrity. You can be my night of the year every night of the year, which eventually, you know, turned into Baby Eden, Baby Callen, Baby Rocco, and they've helped plant a couple churches. Brock is a football coach leading young men in a world where 50% of all kids don't have a dad in the home. Brock's a coach, the closest thing to a dad that some of these kids might ever know, taking his family on missions trips, passing that baton from generation to generation. That's why we do the work. That's what it's all about, is passing that baton of faith.
That's such a beautiful story and just a real testament to what it means if we would be intentional, if we would be consistent, if we will put that framework in our children's lives so that they can then begin to grow from it. We're talking with Bill and Pam Farrell today about their book, The 10 Best Decisions Every Parent Can Make. We'd love to have you join in the conversation if you'd like. And we also have a couple of their books to give away. So give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. We'd love to hear from you. Back in a minute with Bill and Pam Farrell.
www.thepeacefulbeacon.org. You rescued me, and I believe that God is love, and He is all I need from this day forward to all eternity.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking with Bill and Pam Farrell about the 10 best decisions every parent can make. And Bill and Pam, one thing you write in your book that really hit home with me is, even though we may make a lot of good decisions and have the best laid plans, you say that parenting hurts sometimes. What do you mean by that?
Oh, let me give you an example from our son Zach's life. Because when we share the Brock story, everybody's like, I'm so inspired. Or the second feeling we get from people is, I'm totally annoyed. You have no idea what I'm dealing with this kid. We have a spirited child as well, so not every day is like smooth and wonderful. Oh, no. My face in prayer with that boy. And so when he was about 8 years old, we were doing the whole learner leader thing with him, and he started spiraling down. Bad attitudes, bad grades, just like negative around our house. He had this medical problem he couldn't control, so that's underlying anger, but he wasn't very verbal, so his answer was beat up who's ever nearest. And one day I walked into the living room, and he was beating up his brothers again. And so I said, Zachary, honey, this is inappropriate. You go upstairs, Mama come talk to you. Well, he ran up the stairs, knocked all the pictures off the wall. He slammed the door, picked up a baseball, put it through the door, hole in the door as I walk in. And so I say to Zach, honey, you have got to learn to use words. So I thought in my mind, no woman's ever going to marry you. You're going to live with me forever. Use your words. And he said, you want words? Well, I hate myself and I hate my life. And if God made me, I hate him too. And I said, just spit it. And I ran downstairs. I threw myself across the bed, prayed a frantic mommy prayer. Dear Lord Jesus, I'm a pastor's wife, director of women's ministry, write all these Christian books. And I'm raising this little wild man of an atheist upstairs. Could you use some help? So I called Bill on the phone. We prayed together. And when I was praying, I'm like, Lord, I know every person is a treasure. And I'm like, oh, that might work. A treasure map. And so Bill said,
Pam, go for it. I'm all behind you because we got to figure this out. We got to turn this kid's heart.
And so I go upstairs and I say, Zach, you are a treasure to the world, I said, my face. And so every day I'm going to ask you two things. What's one thing you did well? What's something positive about your day? We're going to write it on the treasure map. At the end of 6 weeks, Mom and Dad are going to give you X amount of dollars to buy some resources to live out your treasure. What do you think?
This is stupid. I hate this.
Zach, what's one thing positive about your day?
Nothing.
Okay, Zach, I can think of something. You're alive, meaning I haven't killed you yet, kid. And so the first thing on the treasure map is Zach is alive. But this amazing thing started happening. He went from, like, totally apathetic to bringing the treasure map to us and writing down all the positive things about himself and his day. And at the end of that 6 weeks, we found out some stuff about Zach. We knew he was a great athlete, but we found out he loved music, that music was kind of like a calming balm to his little ADD soul. And that we found out he loved people. Yeah, kind of threw us off because he beat everybody up. But relationship was really the key that unlocked Zach's heart. So from that point on, we put two tickets to whatever the church or community group or Christian school was doing, so we had a friend to make good choices with. Well, fast forward, about 10 years ago, he's on the co-ed cheer team that has just won nationals. And so we're going to go watch the filming. ESPN's going to put them on TV. And so we get on this elevator in Dallas, Texas. A little boy, about 7, gets on with his sweet single mom, and this little boy is out of control, and the mom is exhausted. I recognize the look. And he's bumping in all the people, and he's pushing all the buttons, and pretty soon she has to deal with him. So she says, Zachary? And I'm like, you're a Zach. We have a Zach. He's just like you. He's like ADD. He has this club. It's called Hyper for God, and only little boys like you can be in it, because he found out you can use hyper for good and not just evil. And his team, he's a hyper for good, and his team just won nationals. And, you know, he used to have D's and F's when he was your age, but he's a hyper for good, and now he's got straight A's. Do you want to come meet my Zach? He was just given a scholarship for college. Do you want to meet my Zach? And no kidding, the mom just pushed the kid aside and says, I don't know about him, but I want to meet your Zach. I want to see a miracle.
Pam and Bill, I hate to cut you off, but our show has come to a close. So if you want to hear the rest of that story and you're listening in, you're going to have to buy the book. Most of it's in there, is it not? I feel like it is, Pam.
Exactly.
Yes. So the 10 best decisions every parent can make by Bill and Pam Farrell. Thank you so much to both of you for being able to join us today and tell us both things we can work toward, things that may happen, and things that may frustrate us. Thanks for helping to speak to all of us as we've been listening in today.
Thanks for being a miracle giver and hope giver, too. God bless.